Coming to you live from St. Louis, Missouri.
It's the Faster Freedom Show.
With your hosts, Sam Prim and Lucas Wolf.
We talking about freedom?
We are going to be talking to Kong, who has, what, how many followers, Kong? Do you have 5 million followers on social media?
No, probably around 4.
Probably around 4 million. So sorry, only 4 million followers on social media.
Yeah. I'm not good enough to get up to 5, bro.
Oh, you will get there. You stop it. So Kong has a really cool story. So Kong, when I talk to people, I use you as a reference. I say, I'm like, Kong, you have a really, really cool story. You have like a rags to riches story, and I don't. I grew up in the Midwest and the middle class, so we come from completely different places, but we're both trying to do the same thing. So I think it's just social media is a really cool avenue that allows people from all different walks of life to make an impact. So I think that's pretty cool. So why did you start posting on social media, Kong? What was the reason you started posting on social media?
Yeah, Sam, so this got to be, what, 6-7 years ago, man. So at this time, I got my real estate kind of business wholesaling all set up. I think we're doing close to like $100,000 a month. I got the VAs, everything in place. I was working only like maybe like 1 or 2 hours a day. And I just have no desire like to grow that. But I love teaching. Like, I love teaching. And I was like bored, right? I got so much time. I don't know what to do, what else to do. And then that's when it was like 10 at night. I was laying in bed and Gary Vee popped up on my feed. We all know who Gary Vee is, the legend, the godfather of social media. And he was saying how, you know, everybody needs to start posting content, building their personal brand, because it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And he was just telling all these opportunities that will open up once people know who you are. And I say, oh, shoot. And I love teaching. I love teaching, Sam. But I also don't want to be in front of the camera, right? Because I've never done it before. But I like, you know what? I love the idea. I love teaching. So, dude, the next morning, I just couldn't wait to wake up. I went down to like the beautiful park where I was, whipped out my phone and did my first YouTube video, bro. The audio was bad. The video was bad. Everything was just bad, but I did it and then I posted. And that's how it all got started.
Do you remember at first kind of which video? Was there a certain video for you that kind of propelled your brand forward? Because I'm sure at first, Kong, you were making videos and they were getting 50 views, 30 views, 100 views, and you were kind of laying in that place where everybody is when they get started. Nobody starts off with viral, viral, viral. So do you remember a specific video that kind of launched you, or was it just a culmination of posting and posting and posting?
You know, Sam, I think for YouTube, it was posting, posting, posting. And then I started to come up with all these ideas. Like, I did like first deal interview where I bring other people that close their first deal on as a guest and do an interview. I also did what's called a Friday cold call role play, but it just one on top of another on top of another. I know what video did it for me on TikTok, but for YouTube, it's just one video on top of another and just providing, obviously, you know, providing value to the viewer. That was like the main focus. Like, how can I do it, but how can I do it differently versus, you know, somebody else?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point you made. All the algorithms are slightly different, and especially before TikTok, there was no real viral ability. You couldn't go viral with just your first YouTube video, but TikTok, correct, you can. TikTok brought that virality. It used to be you had to get followers to get views. TikTok completely flipped the script. You can get views without followers right away, and it's all about, it went from a creator-based algorithm to a content-based algorithm. So we're gonna get into real estate and Kong's story there. Don't worry, everybody. But I just wanted to jam with my boy on social media for a little bit. So what was your first TikTok video that went viral? How many videos in was it before you had your first viral TikTok?
Dude, Sam, I think my first viral TikTok video was. But before I get to that, Sam, I also want to go back to your previous question. Dude, okay. I remember posting, and it felt like, you know, it felt like, Lawrence, like, it felt kind of like a waste of time, but I love it and I just enjoy it. And I remember getting my first subscriber. Sam, I said, oh, hell yeah, baby. Someone is listening to me. Hopefully it's not my mommy or daddy, right? But dude, that first subscriber, and for me, Sam, and I think for you as well, we all, you know, we look back at our history. Everything that we have done didn't just pop up and didn't just blow up. It was just gradually, consistently doing it. And for me, it's, I knew that I wanted to play a long-term game, that I knew that it's going to take me a while to get view. I know it's going to take me a long time to get subscriber. And I knew that first subscriber is going to lead to the second one and so on, right? But that first one, dude, got me so pumped. And then the next milestone was the 100. Dude, when I got 100 people on, Sam, I was like, Lon, oh, hell yeah, baby, I'm getting famous, dude. So anyways, Sam, to answer your recent question, man, so the TikTok video that blew up for me was dealing a fit check. I basically said, hey, here's my fit cost, and here's how much I made in 1 month. So a lot of people got the ideas of, you know, millionaire have to wear designer clothes and they have to live in big mansion. For me, dude, Lon and I still live in the regular, you know, house that we bought, 17 years ago. I still go to a shop at Ross. I still shop at Old Navy. I still shop at H&M. I don't care for designer clothes. So when I did that video, it just somehow just took off.
How many views did you get? Do you remember?
I think that was like my first million view video.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, dude, this is game over.
Game over. No, and I think that's really, really, this is something I preach to people, Kong, and you'll probably agree with me. So many people create a viral video and then they try to continually recreate viral videos, which of course we do, but they don't go back to that video. You do the fit check stuff all the time, and then you started to bring in other people to do the fit check, because the concept of how much money you make versus what you spend on your clothes is a really, really viral concept. And my concept of I'm in $26 million worth of debt, 30, well, you know, I know you've done one with Lucas, you know, when at the last Collective Genius, but I go back to that concept a lot as I'm experimenting, and I know you do the same thing. I've heard Gary Vee say the same thing. He's like, so many people, if you create one viral video, make long form, make short form, make medium form, make posts, make pictures, make squeeze everything you can out of that viral concept. Stop trying to think that every other video you make is going to go viral. So I just wanted to point that out, that you do the same thing. If we get a viral concept, I'm always experimenting. I'm flexing, I'm coaching, I'm teaching, I'm doing the best I can to create really quality content, but I always do go back to those concepts that do hit. Do you kind of do something similar?
Yeah, Sam, I mean, I absolutely agree with you, because I think how the funnel on social media really work is that, you know, obviously you want 80% of your things to be about your niche, right? Educational, whatever niche that you're in, I think that should be 80%. And then 20% should be, you know, whatever topic you want to talk about. And so my thing is, you got to get exposure, leading people, so the funnel works like, you know, like this, and then it goes like this. So you got to get exposure, so all these people coming in. And let's just say you made a comedy skit, right? But you're not teaching comedy, right? So they go, so all these people watch that video and say, dude, Sam is funny. Let me go check out all of his other comedy video. But then they go and they say, oh, Sam is not a comedian. He's a real estate investor. So all of those people, and the people that wants to learn about real estate will stay. And the people that are like, oh, I thought he was a comedian, and then will leave. But what you're missing is that you need to get the exposure, right? The people to see you, and then they'll come in the funnel, and then it will trickle down to the people only stay, right, that wants to actually learn about real estate.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one thing I've noticed, Kong, and I'm interested in your opinion on this, and then we'll get to some real estate stuff, but what I've noticed, Kong, is in order to grow a big brand, like you have, you know, we have a similar Instagram following. Your YouTube crushes, does really well. And then TikTok for me is banned right now. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we both have really big TikTok following, both big, really big Instagram following. And in order to like get to that mark where you're getting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers, it takes virality. Like you have to get viral. You have to reach people outside of your niche and outside of your current audience. So you have to do bigger, broader topics. If I get, you know, if I get 100 videos that get 10,000 views each, or that's a million views, or I get 1 million view video, it's the same amount of views, but my million view video is going to get way more followers, way more subscribers, because it reached that virality. You can't consistently put out content that doesn't perform and get followers. You have to hit that level beyond your core audience, and that's why you have to do, that's why your fit check, that can, anybody can do that, whether they're interested in real estate or not. That's why my 26 million in debt concept hits, because they don't have to care about real estate. That is is a interesting thing to hear somebody say, right? You're going to watch the rest of that video. So you need virality to get followers. So many people consistently post, and I see them post hundreds of videos that are decent, but they're not reaching outside their niche at all. So they're not reaching a new audience. So therefore, they're not reaching new followers. You kind of agree with that?
Dude, all I got to say is when you can get a hold of Dave Ramsey to know about you, you're doing something right, Sam. That's all I got to say. And the thing is, Sam, talk about social media. You're like, when I go on and I see other people's page, even though they have like high quality, I'm talking about like high quality content, but they're barely getting any followers or they're not seeing the growth. To me, Sam, when you first starting out, people talk about volume, right? Consistent and volume. I agree with that. To some extent, because putting out a lot of volume will make you become better, right? And then you feel more comfortable in front of the camera. But I can tell you right now, putting out more content and you don't see the growth, it's not about that. You need to know what's working, what's not working, what's trending, right? And your execution is not good, right? You need to work on your execution, your stories, and then maybe your little punch at the end, something that stands out. Because I see people saying, like, I go to people's page, like, they got good stuff, right? But I watch the video and I look at their page and I understand why they're not growing. You can post 2 to 3 a day, but I'm telling you right now, consistency and volume is not gonna help you grow. It's you need to understand how to actually execute that piece of ideas, that content in a way that can actually get attention.
And then come up with a catchphrase, right?
Yeah, come up with the catch. Sam, you know Steve, right? Steve Tran. So Steve content, hopefully
it's not really that good. He's not watching this. His content's not very good. Sorry, I'm just kidding.
Well, the thing is, like, it's a little boring because I know Steve is in sales training, but when you watch Steve and when you watch, like, well, what's his name, Andy Elliott?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, like, you know why that guy got a big amount of following? Dude, his energy. He's just really loud and he just stands. Now, I'm not saying Steve have to be loud. You don't have to be a different person. But what I did, so I went out, this is like 2 years ago. Sam, I went out to CG and we execute a piece of content on Steve because I like, dude, like, I don't care. It's not about you being boring. As long as you have the knowledge, the information, dude, we can get you exposed. So we went out there. And we did, I think, 2 videos. And those videos, Sam, got him hundreds of thousands of views. So I know
them?
That it's possible. It's just that his team is not on top of his social media game, man.
Yeah, I think, so you brought up an interesting point. So, like, you are very, very talented at making content. Like, you are very charismatic. I always tell people.
You too, Sam.
I always tell people that, like, they're like, is Kong really like that way? I was like, no, Kong's different off camera than on camera. Kong is subdued on camera. The dude's crazier off camera. So it's not fake. When he acts crazy, that's 100% who he is. Kong is just as crazy off camera as he is on camera. And I'm not quite as crazy as you. I do have my moments, but there's different ways to do it. Like, I feel like you do it with just raw talent and charisma. And we just talked earlier before we went live that you don't really look at your analytics. You just post content, you know what goes viral, doesn't go viral. You're just talented. And I know I'm not trying to downplay myself. I know I have talent on camera too, but I'm more of the analytical type. Like, I'm going to post, analyze it, and I'm going to post. I'm going to see why this video did well, why it didn't do well. Let's figure out how to repeat things. And you do that to a certain extent, but you don't have to be like this crazy, charismatic, let's go get this Monet, crip walking, dancing guy that you do. Like, you can do it like me, a little more subdued. I'm not as boring as Steve. Steve's like this sheet of paper, but I have a little more than that. But you don't have to be like this super, super crazy extrovert to be successful on social media, I guess is what I'm saying. You just have to find your niche, find your authenticity, and then just bring as much character to it as you can where it still seems authentic.
Dude, absolutely, Sam. 100%,
awesome.
Dude. Everything you said, right on point.
Okay, cool. So Kong's trying to help me get my TikTok account back. Let's talk about TikTok and then let's round out and we'll get back into some real estate. So my TikTok account got banned for the first time ever. You've had yours banned a few times and like mine literally happened out of nowhere. I'm never usually in TikTok jail. I usually always do things. I'm never like my account warning or anything like that. You know, sometimes people report videos and all this kind of stuff falsely and I appeal it. But in general, my account got banned and I'm working on getting him back. I appealed through TikTok and working through some other routes. So you've been banned a couple of times on TikTok now and you're helping me get my account back. So I appreciate the help.
Sam, dude, you're welcome, dude. I got banned like, I would say 5 to 6 times. Each time, it cost me a lot. And also, too, is like everything, all the mistakes that you guys made, like going live, getting shut down during my live, getting banned, getting warning, I have all of that. I made all the mistakes. So there's no mistake that you have not made on TikTok that I have not. Like, I got into the creativity program, made a mistake, they shut their can out, they didn't even pay me, which is fine, whatever.
Yeah, that's funny. 6 times, you're a wild man. You're a wild man. Okay, so we talked about your first viral video. Let's walk the audience through your first wholesale deal, if you wouldn't mind. I feel like every time I kind of talk about my first flip, my first rental, my first wholesale, it hits home with the audience because you have a huge wholesaling operation and it's all automated and you're not as hands-on as used to be and you have all that rocking and rolling. That's not quite as relatable as your very first deal. So a lot of people listening to this and watching this want to get their first deal. So why don't you kind of walk me through the story of your first wholesale deal, if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely, Sam. So I'm going to take you guys back 12 years ago. So probably 12, 13 years ago is when I first got into real estate. But I'm going to cut the story really, really short. So when I first started out, I hired 6 months in, I couldn't close my first deal. So I hired a mentor. My mentor, you know, he does more of fix and flip and then buy and hold. So he said, hey, Kong, get into fix and flip. So that's exactly what I did. Have no construction background, no experience, no connection. I didn't even know what vinyl window is. I didn't even know what laminate flooring is, Sam. I didn't know what shingle is. None of that. I had to learn all of those terms. So 4.5 years into the fix and flip game, I almost lost everything, Sam. I got about $1.5 million tied up, Sam. I got Uncle Sam on my ass. Dude, it was scary. It was so scary because throughout my life, Sam, my parents always taught me stay away from the popo, stay away from the government, like don't mess with them, etc. So, dude, I got $1.5 million tied up, and I just couldn't leverage anymore. And I was just so stressed out, dude. My car was a mess. And then one of my local investors said, Kong, you know what, dude? You're so good at finding deals and negotiating with sellers. Why don't you just wholesale? I was like, dude, wholesale? Like, what do you mean? You know, when you put a property in a contract, instead of you buying the deal, you can just sell it to me. I said, okay, well, you know, I kind of search it and then, you know, learn about it a little bit. And then I start to target expired listings, Sam. So basically houses that are listed on the market and that are taken off of the market. So I would sit there in my computer, handwriting letters to expired listing. And this one lady called me. Her probably just went expired. She calls me. We talk back and forth, build a rapport. About 4 phone calls in, negotiate out a deal with her. We met at McDonald's, signed a purchase and sell contract. 2 days later, I found a local investor in my RIA, sell it over to him. Dude, we closed it in 15 days. I made $28,000. Sam, to me, dude, it was like godsend, baby. I was like, dude, I'm going to shut down my fix and flip operation. I'm going to go all in. This is the game that I want to play. Because all that cost me, Sam, was $250 of my earnest money deposit to lock that deal up on contract. And I said, dude, what if I just do 2 of these a month? Or even just 1 a month. And that's what I did. I went all into wholesaling. And then I took all my money from wholesaling, just kind of finished up my rehab. So for like a year, year and a half, dude, all I was just funding, get my rehab done and get myself out of the mess.
No, I love that. I think it just goes to show that you didn't just give up on real estate. You tried a different avenue. A lot of people try something and give up. And the beautiful thing about real estate, and you just proved it, is there's so many different avenues. You can get into arbitrage of like Airbnb units or something and not even really have any, you know, any exposure really besides the rent that you're kind of arbitraging. Or you can get into wholesaling and you need money and you don't have to have money and credit to wholesale. It helps if you can close on a deal, but you don't have to. It's not a requirement. Or you can do the fix and flip thing and take a little more risk and make bigger chunks potentially. Or you can do the long-term game, buying rental properties and make a little cash flow, but have the long-term stuff going on. And I know you do a little bit of all of that, but it just goes to show the power of real estate. And there's so many different avenues to go down. You just got to figure out, just try all of them, or at least try a few of them, and then go all in on your favorite. Would you think that's some good advice?
Absolutely, Sam. Agree.
Good. I love it. So so now that you got your first deal, you did that, then you kind of went all in on wholesaling. Talk a little bit about your team and how the team you've built. And I know that we've talked at length, because we've known each other for, what, 4 or 5 years now, at length about, you know, we kind of are different in a lot of different ways. You're taller than I am, and you're more handsome.
I wish, bro. Sam, I wish I was just as close as tall as you, bro.
We're a little bit different in height and a lot of different things, but you don't want to have this huge, huge team and grow and expand. You want to make more money, and you want to figure out different ways to do it, but you like a close-knit team, which I'm kind of going the other way. Sometimes I think you're smart to do that, but tell me a little bit about your team and how you've built it and kind of your goals with your team and how you keep it kind of small.
Well, the thing is, I think, you know, Sam wants to be a billionaire, and I don't think you can be a billionaire with a small team. And I have no desire to be a billionaire. My whole thing is, I just want to build a business where I don't want to work all day long in it, a few hours a day, right? And I got 7 VAs run my whole entire business operation. Every business that I start, I was like, how can I put the minimum amount of hours? And I'm okay with making a few million dollars a year. Like, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with making a few million dollars a year and be able to travel, to do whatever I want, wherever, whenever, and with whoever the F I want. Someone invite me to go speak, I would not be like, oh no, I don't want to go there, but I'll do it because I know it's going to do this for my brand. I'll get more students. I'm not going to do it. You know, Sam, I made a post where I said, I don't have the FU money yet, but I have the FU attitude. The most dangerous thing about me right now, Sam, is that I am content, dude. Dude, because I'm a guy that started in a mud hut. I used to catch frogs for dinner. I started out making $8.50 an hour. And now, dude, I'm making a few $100,000 a month. What else am I want? Like, what else am I asking for? Obviously, you know, I still want to grow. I still want to make more money. But I will refuse to do business with people that I don't like or do things that I don't want to do. Right? That's it.
That's a good place to be. I think, like you said, that's a very, very good, happy, and dangerous place to be, when you do what you want, when you want, and you don't have to necessarily, you know, decide between things because of monetary or time constraints. Yep. If you have the money to do it, if you want to do it, you have the time to do it if you want to do it. If you don't have the time to do it, you know, then you won't do it. So it's completely your control of your financial situation, as well as, you know, your time situation, which is true freedom. You know what I mean? That not many people get to that point. So I think you put a lot of hard work to get there. So you have smaller teams, and you're still wholesaling, and you're educating are your main thing. So can you talk a little bit about, and I almost got you, I'm excited to get you yelling at the screen a little bit here in a minute, get you pumped up, but we'll save that towards the end. Can you talk about some of your best lead sources right now? Because personally, I've noticed it kind of fluctuates. When I got started in 2014, 15, you could buy REO bank-owned properties off the MLS pretty easily. And then that went away. And then short sales kind of started to go away. And then, you know, driving for dollars was good for a while. And direct mail is always good if you're consistent. And there's so many different ways to find deals. So could you kind of talk through some of your favorite ways to get deals in today's market?
Absolutely, Sam. But before that, Sam, let me answer the other questions as well, because I don't think I really answer it. So for my wholesaling team, I got 7 VAs. So first off, I want to say thank to the wifey. Without Lawn, I wouldn't be the man I am today, and I wouldn't be doing the thing I'm doing today. It's Lawn and baby Jesus, dude. It's Lawn and baby Jesus that actually got me here today, man. So I have a team of 7 VAs. So Lawn runs the whole entire operation in the back end. She does all the hiring, all the training, all the fire. Dude, if you have problem letting people go, get Lawn on the phone. Dude, she's cold.
I know, she scares me.
Bro. They're entrepreneur that runs a big business, bro, that is afraid to fire people. Dude, you gotta be like, when they're not an asset to the company, dude, you need to let them go. And I know some of you have that soft heart, dude, but you gotta understand, this is a business. You cannot blend personal with business. Dude, it's like cut. You don't want one wrong tomato to ruin the whole entire batch. The longer you keep them, it's one, not good for your team, not good for your company, but it's also not good for that person. that person is maybe they're not a good fit for your team. You need to let them go so they can actually seek something else that is better fit for them. But Lon is cold, dude.
So the next time I need to let somebody go, just call Lon?
Call Lon.
Okay, perfect.
Dude, Lon gets on the phone, Lon, like, you're done. Like Donald Trump, dude. She's like, see ya. That's it. She's like, see ya. Here's your pay. Here's a little bonus. Done.
Adios.
Adios. Hasta luego. Hasta luego, amigos. So I have a team of 7 VAs that run my whole entire wholesaling operations. I got 3 cold caller. All right. They do cold call and SMS. So I think I answered your question with this too, Sam. But I agree with you. When I first started out, there was a lot of good deals on the MLS. You can actually, submit offer to agents. If you submit enough, right, you can get some really good deals. And I would connect with realtor, and I would do expired listing. That's my 2 main focus when I first started. Now, all we do is SMS and cold calling. I got 3 cold call. They cold call and they answer SMS. I got 2 purchase manager that will lock property under contract completely over the phone, virtual. No meeting the seller, no seeing the property, all right? And it's not just me. There's many people that can do it, okay? And then I got one, I call them transactional coordinator, which is disposition. Their job is just get the deal to the finish line and get it sold. And then I got another one that's a call auditor. This is so important for those of you. You need a call auditor to monitor the lead manager and the purchase manager phone call. Because a lot of times they're not always come in with their A game. And sometimes they're not saying the things that they're supposed to say. Maybe they're not being polite with whoever it is. So the call auditor will catch some of those. Dude, what if they just catch one of them that falls through the crack once a month? And that one deal that they catch can make you $10,000. It's already worth it to pay a VA just to sit there and listen to all these calls. And then Lon's in the back that gets everything else taken care of. That's my
nice.
Wholesaling operations.
What about your education? How many people are in that company?
Dude, so obviously we outsourced the sales team. So I guess I'm not going to count that.
Okay.
I think I got 3 VAs that handle all of my DMs, my email, my community texts, and then Angie's the one that does that actually run them and then train them. So she's kind of like the manager of the other 3 VAs. So 4.
Nice. And for those that don't know, VA is virtual assistant. It's usually somebody overseas, but doesn't have to be. Yep. It's somebody virtually working, with technology and working on your behalf, just to button that up. Okay. So a very, very tight-knit organization. And right now your leads are basically mainly pretty much all coming from, outbound with texting and cold calling. Would that be accurate? Awesome. Okay. And how many are you taking down a month on average, would you say?
You mean like how many deals we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Man, so far I think the first quarter we're starting out slow. So we're doing between, I would say maybe six a month, but our average deal is between 20 to 25K, and we're only doing about 6 of that. But then what we're starting to do now, Sam, is I'm leaning towards more doing some more JV. So I just recently hired a VA. That all they do is they go through social media and then they just scrubbing, finding all the wholesaler that has a prop and a contract. And then I got a dispo dude, which is my transaction coordinator. She's just so good at finding buyers and linking the buyers to that. And then I think last month we did 20K just from JV deal. Cost me no marketing money. Didn't have to talk to any seller. We're just finding other wholesaler that already has a prop and a contract and then connect them with our buyer, because we've got a large cash buyer list.
That's awesome. So you're content in what you're doing and keeping your company small, but you're always looking for edges and always looking to improve. If new technology comes out, you're going to try it. If there's a new strategy that comes out, you're going to try it. So you're content, but you are looking to kind of maximize what you already have and improve what you're already doing. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, Sam. So I mean, like with my wholesaling business, Sam, like I think I said this like 3 years or so ago. Like I'm happy with where it's at, dude. I'm happy with the team. I'm happy with doing just 6-figure a month on it, right? I don't need to scale that thing up to 500,000 because I know how much work, how big of a team I would need, all right, and how much more overhead and money I would have to spend. I just have no desire in that. So for me, I love the more like the social media creating content. One, I see a lot more potential. I see that I can scale it a lot bigger. And then I love really doing it. So why don't I just go all in on the things that I love doing? So for me, I focus on more growing that bigger. But once again, I don't want to have, you know, like I don't want to have 50 or 100 employees that runs my social media team or agency or whatever you want to call it. I just want to keep it small, lean, mean machine, man.
No, I like it. And the margins on the, you know, on the branding and the education side are just so much bigger than on the real estate side.
Oh, dude, absolutely. Hands down.
So let's talk about your team a little bit, because you have a huge brand. You have a ton of followers, and I've noticed, I've seen like pictures of Alex Hormozi's social media team. There's like probably 15. And then I've seen pictures of Pace's brand, and I've talked to Pace, his branding and social media team. There's like 13 people on it. I'm like got like 3.5 people on my social media team, and I know you do. We're both very involved in our social media. A lot of people, in my opinion, their mistake they make is they hire it out too early, or they're not involved in the process. I know you're very involved in the process. I would assume you still occasionally edit videos. I do. I have a team that does a lot of it, but I do some editing myself. You know, a few times a week. So talk a little bit about your team on social media. How you come up with the ideas? Are they all your origination? Do you you know, shoot all at one time? Talk a little bit about your social media brain and that creation process, how that works for you.
Yeah, so basically, Sam, so I get all, so I have an editor. So what they do is when I shoot a long YouTube video, they'll just take that YouTube video, they go, they chop it up, right? And then they'll post it. But just like you, you know, there are times where I just sit in the car, or maybe I just want to shoot something. I'll shoot it really quick. I'll edit. It's just, it's so easy for me, bro. I can shoot a video, right? Edit it, takes me like 10, 15 minutes, and boom, I got a video ready to go. Angie just take care of, you know, all the DMs, running the VAs, but the VA mainly is just to handle all the back end, which is all the DMs, people asking, you know, to, you know, students, whatever it is, right? That's mainly what it is. But as far as in, I don't have, you know, I don't have where, I don't have, like, every piece of content I post, I know what's going on with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they take a piece of content from something that they post, and I'll be like, what the heck is this? It's not even me. Dude, I know, man. I track and I know every piece of content that's being put out there. And if it's not related to who I am, dude, take it off. Like take it off. Like, I don't need that thing to go viral, but it's not related to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it has to match my personality and who I am.
No, I agree. And I think that's where a lot of people, they want it outsourced, and you just can't outsource your authenticity and your personality.
Correct.
And I would assume it's a similar for you. Most of the videos that go viral, not all of them, and I'm gonna, when I say viral, let's say 500,000 on Instagram and 1 million on TikTok, right? That's my viral just in my head. So when I say, that's what I mean by viral. So most of my videos, if you know, I'd say 90% of my viral videos are me. Creating it, editing it super simply in CapCut or in whatever, super simple, no overlays, no B-roll, none of that, none of the crazy effects. And then the team does some editing and the effects, and they do okay. Some of them go viral. But in general, I would assume, similar to you, most of your big videos are the ones that your hands are on the entire time. Is that accurate?
Dude, absolutely.
Yeah, I think part of it's because we probably built our brand with just us doing it ourselves completely for the longest time. So that's what our audience knows and expects. And that's who sees your videos, are your core audience. And they're there from day one, and they're there because they love that style. You know, so that's what I've noticed.
So true. So
cool.
True.
All right, a couple more questions for you. So can you talk to the audience right now, Kong, about what do you say to people that make excuses, that say, oh, I have some student loan debt, so I can't invest in real estate, or, oh, I can't find the time. You know, I'd rather watch Netflix than, you know, go to a RIA. What do you say to those people that are being, you know, being little bitches, as you like to say?
You know, Sam, like, my whole entire thing throughout my whole entire life, Sam, growing up, I had to work for everything that I got today. Nothing was handed. Both of my parents were making $25,000 a year, working at a factory, putting their money in the 401k, and retire with barely any money, right? So for me, dude, you only got two choices in life since the day that you're born, dude, all right? You either get rich or be a little bitch, which means, dude, you either be the boss or you work for a boss. Look at everybody that you know. They either work for themselves, building their own business, or they're working for someone, okay? So the choices, you got to make up the choices. And then talk about making excuses, dude. You're either making money or you're making excuses. And I can tell you right now, the people that are making money, They don't have time to make excuses. Like, you know, I'm sure with Sam, when we start to build a business, you know, you're doing things that you have never done before. You will come across things that you don't know what to do, right? You'll be like, you feel stuck. You feel stressed out, overwhelmed. But guess what, my friend? They don't be like, oh, man, I can't do this. I'm not made for this, this and that. You know, they don't sound like a little bitch. They'll be like, hey, you know what? How can I figure this out? Who do I need to talk to? Where do I need to go to get the information? They will do whatever it requires, whatever it takes to get that shit done, period. See, Sam, the people that make excuses, just look at your bank account. You already, dude, just look at your bank account as a reflection if you're an action taker or an excuse maker. The end. That's it, dude.
I like it. I knew I'd get you fired up. Yeah, no, that's what I was going for. It's people that make excuses, because, you know, I grew up, you know, definitely different than you. I didn't have a silver spoon in my mouth, but I look at people that, like, you know, had a pretty good situation, and like, then look at your situation. Grew up in a mud hut, picked berries, you know, didn't even speak English coming over here, picked berries, sold, you know, hair extensions at the mall, and you figured it out. And you had way more obstacles than 99% of the people that are making excuses. So it's all about perseverance and pushing through and not giving up. And so many people, if they don't see the immediate results, they just give up, and they're not willing to, you know, offset immediate results for, you know, continuing to push through. So I just wanted to get you a little fired up.
Dude, Sam, I was driving through Taco Bell, right? And there's this guy there, and he followed me on TikTok. And he's like, hey, Kong, I've seen your stuff, man. I really want to get into wholesaling, this and that, dude. But I'm going to school. I'm working Taco Bell. I just don't have the time. And this is what I said, Sam. I said, if you know, dude, if you know deep down, but if you take action, and in the next 30 days or 60 days, you can make $10,000 from wholesaling one deal, would you do it? Would you make the time? Like, if you know, bro, like, if you know, like, almost guaranteed. He said, of course you will make the time. Of course you're willing to do whatever it takes, right? Work an extra few hours, whatever it is, but you will make it happen if you know. But a lot of times, you know, when you go at this, you don't know. You just have to have the faith and the belief and the confidence in yourself that you will make it happen. That's it. You must have that attitude of, dude, you see, like, most people, Sam, they only say they want something, but when it comes to doing it, they won't do it. Everybody wants to lose weight and looks good. Who goes to the gym on the weekend? Who goes to the gym every single day? Who eat healthy, right? Dude, like, we all know what we need to do. It's just that some people, Sam, they choose to do what's fun, what's easy, and what's convenient. You know, throughout my life, Sam, I just know one thing, dude. If you do what's fun and easy first, your life, I can guarantee you, dude, will be hard. You like to party? You like to party when you're 18, 19, 20s? You like to go to club, popping bottles, using drugs? Your life, dude, will be messed up in your 30s. You pay for the price when you're 30. You pay for the price when you're 40. You will pay for the price. But if you're willing to do what's hard first, dude, I promise you, life will be easy. It's hard to live in a shed for 5 years. That's what Lon and I did. Live in a little shed behind a mobile home park for 5 years. Live below our mean, didn't eat out, didn't drink Starbucks. Dude, but Sam, when I was 23, bought my first house, and Lon and I didn't worry about, you know, that paycheck anymore. Because we had money saved up, and then we used that to get into real estate. So for Lon and I, dude, we did what was hard first. I was driving a 1997 Honda Accord, dude, with over 200,000 miles, even when I was making $200,000 a year. Who do that? The people that understand that they need to make the sacrifice today for tomorrow. They rather sacrifice today for the good life tomorrow. That's who will do it.
The people that want the
gratification now, dude, it's the one that's going to pay for the price, dude.
Yeah, and what car do you drive now?
Rory. A 2022 Rory, man.
That's exciting.
It's a dream come true, man.
That is awesome. So we'll round it out here in a minute, let you get out of here. But before then, I want to talk about those people that want to get ahead and they're willing to work hard. And I always tell people that the best way to get ahead is to follow somebody else's proven path. And in my opinion, you're in masterminds with me. You spend a lot of money like I do on on masterminds. But in my opinion, you know, you pay for education no matter what. You either pay through education through inaction or inefficiency, or you pay for education to follow somebody else's proven path. So when you talk a little, once you talk a little bit about, you knew that quickly. You hired a mentor very quickly because you saw that you couldn't do it on your own. So why don't you talk to people that think that paying for education is, you know, not worth it, or, you know, it's a scam to pay for somebody else's knowledge.
You see, Sam, you know, for me, it's knowledge without execution is worthless. If you don't have the work ethic, if you don't have the ambitions or the drive or the commitment, if I were you, dude, to stick to the J, O, the B. You don't have what it takes to be an entrepreneur. You don't have what it takes to build a business. So don't waste your money. Don't hire a mentor. You don't need it because you ain't going to make it anyway because you don't have the work ethic. All right. But Sam, after so what makes me pull the trigger to pay over $100,000 for my mentor? It's this one reason. So I started out, you know, when I first got in, Sam, I did the whole thing trying to learn it myself. I listened to all the podcasts. I went to seminars, meet up. I did everything, right? I took massive action. But 6 months go by, dude, I haven't even got a deal on the contract. And then that's when I met my mentor in Florida. And I asked myself this question, Sam. I said, Kong, Do you want to see the next 6 months of your life to be the same as the last? I said, oh, hell to the no. Because I know that, Sam, every month that goes by that I don't know how to make $10,000, $20,000 a month, that's how much it's costing me. That's how much it costs you. So every month that goes by that you don't know how to make $10,000 to $20,000, that's how much it costs you. So I said, dude, so I am now, so for me, Sam, I said, that's it. Dude, I want the next 6 months to close my deals and actually doing some real estate already. So I said, you know what? If I pay this my mentor this much, and if later on, if I can learn how to make that in a month, is it worth it? Absolutely. So let's just say the 6 months go by and I don't know how to do a deal. It's costing me $10,000 a month times that by six. How much is that? 60K. That's how much it cost me. So I decided, you know what? I'll pay him 25K. So I pay him $25,000. I flew him out for 3 days. And then over the next course of like a year, I pay him, I think, total of like $100,000 or $110,000. Because we end up splitting like three deals together.
So but it's opportunity cost is the biggest thing you're talking about, is the opportunity cost. So it's not only what you're spending, it's what you could be making with the right knowledge and the right implementation. So, yeah. I 100% agree with that, because so many people just, all they look at is the money that they're spending, but not the money that they could be making. And you made a similar point. I think every time you just got to reference Hormozy, because everybody, he's the new golden child. But yeah. I've heard him say several times, he's like, if I made $70,000 a year, I'd spend $70,000 a year on education. Just learning the groove path and just learning how to stay out of the gutters and just kind of stay in the lane is very, very important. And spending a little bit or a lot of bit of money is very well worth it.
And yes, Sam, I absolutely agree. And I think sometimes, Sam, is people follow too many people, so they get the information confused. So for those of you who wants to get into real estate, the only guy that you need to follow, my man, Sam Prim, the only cat that you need to follow. Start to unfollow people that is not adding value to your life. I go on Instagram, Sam, I see people follow 100, 1,000. What the, dude, come on, man, shit, bro. 100 people, imagine one of those people posts one post a day. It will consume the whole entire life.
Yep.
You only need one or two good people that you can follow and execute, implement on their stuff.
Two, Kong and Sam, right? Sam Faster Freedom and King Kong.
That's all you need, baby.
You get the crazy you get the crazy entertainment and learn about wholesaling from Kong. You get the not as crazy education, but education on flipping and holding rentals for me. You got it all right here in one screen, right?
That's it.
Awesome. So Kong, if somebody, where would you tell somebody if they want to go follow you? Would you say go follow you on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube? If they want to follow you one place that they're not, where would you tell them to follow you?
Yep, wherever your favorite platform is, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok, just go to @RealKingKong.
at Real King Kong. And if you want to learn more about wholesaling, you got a really, really amazing a really, really amazing education platform for wholesalers. How many students have you got have gone through your academy, Kong?
Dude, not as much as Sam, but I honestly don't know.
Kong!
Yeah, dude,
you don't know?
I honestly don't know. I know that currently, Sam, we have active that's in the community still, probably like a few hundreds.
Yeah, well, that's good. Let me float an idea by you live. All right, I was thinking what we should probably do at some point is we should you have wholesalers that find deals that are looking for cash buyers, right?
Yep.
I have cash buyers that are looking for deals to hold with rental properties. Okay. So like just connecting our group in like whatever regions they're investing in, we don't need a piece of it. It just adds value to your group.
Sam, thank you so much, man. It's an honor to be here. Follow my man, Sam.
All right. See you, buddy.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you got some major value from our conversation. If you love what you learn, make sure you like, rate, review the show, and help us spread the word by telling a friend.
If you'd like to learn more about working with me inside one of my programs, we'll have those links in the show notes, along with all our social media handles, so you connect with us there for free. If there's a real estate question you'd like us to answer, feel free to send us a message, and we'll cover it in an upcoming show.